Okay, we're back, and again, today's committee meeting, we'll be hearing various presentations from Head Start and from the Anchorage School District, as well as from the administration and their pre-K program, parents as teachers, and other groups involved with the pre-K programs. It looks like I do have one person who has signed up to testify. Certainly, if we have time, we want to hear from you. If not, definitely Friday is going to be set aside for public testimony on Senate Bill 6 itself. And I want to welcome Senator Giesel, who is joining us this morning, as well as Representative Tuck. Thank you for both for joining us. Okay, so with that, let's go ahead and get started, unless there's any business coming for the committee. Okay, seeing none, I believe we have Mr. Mark Lackey on the line. Mark's with the Head Start program. Mr. Lackey, are you there? Dropped off. Okie dokie. Mr. Lackey is not there. How about Abby Hensley? Okay. How about Beth Snyder, maybe? We got a Beth Snyder? Okay. Okay, we're just, almost all the presentations today, I think, are going to be online, so we'll take them as people come online or as they fall offline. Beth Snyder, are you,
yes.
You with, okay, very good. And you're with the Anchorage School District?
Correct.
Okay. And you were going to testify today on the bill or on pre-K programs at the Anchorage School District?
On Anchorage School District's pre-K program.
Okay, very good. The floor is yours. If you could tell us your name and affiliation, please.
Thank you. Beth Snyder. I'm the Early Childhood Specialist with the Anchorage School District.
Okay.
Members of the Senate, thank you for this opportunity to speak today on behalf of the Anchorage School District's pre-K program. As many of you know, districts around Alaska have a long and successful history of providing services for children 3 to 5 years of age identified with early childhood developmental delays. My focus this morning is to share with you information regarding other Anchorage School District programs that target 4-year-olds not funded through special education dollars. Prior to the 2009-2010 school year, ASD had a handful of pre-Ks funded by federal grants under Title I in migrant education. Through the Alaska Pilot Pre-K Grant Award process and 2-year Title I stimulus funding, also known as ARA, ASD was able to add 5 additional classrooms for a total of 10 pre-Ks. Additionally, Kids Core Incorporated, or KCI, operates a Head Start classroom at another one of ASD's elementary neighborhood schools. During the past 2 years, with the collaboration of KCI, the Anchorage School District, through a variety of funding sources, has been able to provide services for more than 176 young children and their families annually in 11 school sites. All of ASD's preschool programs serve specific populations based on their funding sources. The AP3 collaboration sites, which are held at Creekside and Willowcrest Elementary, require families to meet Head Start economic guidelines and give priority to children experiencing homelessness or who have been involved in the Alaska Child Protection Services. Together, ASD and Head Start work closely with other ASD programs in the community, such as the Child in Transition Homeless Program, shelters, and OCS, to identify eligible children for priority enrollment. Title I funded programs, such as Alaska Native Coastal Charter School, Fairview, North Star, Willowa, and William Tyson Elementary programs, reach out to families residing in their school neighborhoods who are most at risk. Using nationally researched selection criteria, program staff identify and enroll families based on a scoring system that prioritizes highest need families. Additionally, 2 slots in each Title I classroom are reserved for families experiencing homelessness. Brochures, posters, and other relevant information in multiple languages about pre-K is placed in key locations families frequent to ensure awareness of these programs. Families participating in the two migrant education-funded classrooms must meet specific program eligibility requirements under migrant education. ASD's preschools have 16 children per classroom. All programs follow the regular school year calendar, operating classes 5 days weekly from 9 to 1 daily. Busing is included at most sites with the exception of Willowa, which is a walking school, and migrant children are parent transported. Sites provide breakfast and lunch. Schools are staffed by a full-time certified teacher and part-time teaching assistant. AP3 collaboration sites have an additional specialist who coordinates the comprehensive services program component, which includes nutrition, dental, medical, and mental health services to children and families. Families at these sites receive additional family visits throughout the year and can participate in many school or KCI parent involvement opportunities. Partnering with families is a priority and key to the success of the overall pre-K program. Fostering positive relationships through ongoing communication, open-door classrooms, voluntary home visits, which are a minimum of 2 annually, parent-teacher conferences, and many multiple opportunities to participate encourages regular, meaningful family engagement during pre-K and beyond. Ready Kindergarten, a birth through five parenting program sponsored by the National Reading Foundation, focuses on social-emotional development, language, and math skills, and offered 3 times annually at the AP3 sites and in an additional community setting. This well-received program is free to families and comes with childcare, food, educational toys, or tools to take home for families to play with their children. Thoughtful consideration was given in the selection of research-based curriculums currently implemented at all school sites. Using the Alaska Early Learning Guidelines as pre-K standards and realizing the importance of addressing all developmental domains of young children's learning, the creative curriculum was chosen as a framework for guiding student instruction and development. Additionally, ASD's pre-Ks supplemented the creative curriculum with Houghton Mifflin pre-K, which allows for easy alignment between the elementary HM curriculum that is used in most Title I elementary schools. Multiple assessment tools are utilized during the school year with ongoing data collection used to assist teachers with planning, monitoring student growth, and overall program accountability. Measures include tools such as the Picture Peabody Vocabulary Test, Ages and Stages Social-Emotional, and the Creative Curriculum Goal Developmental Continuum. The revised Alaska Developmental Profile aligns with the GOLD assessment system, and we are currently addressing ways to articulate assessment information for students across different tools as students enter the K-through system and beyond. ASD is in the process of developing identifiers on students who have attended these pre-K programs so that longitudinal data can be collected and analyzed. The 9 Title I sites, including the Head Start collaboration classrooms, all receive coaching from an early childhood specialist twice monthly. Weekly teachers come together for ongoing professional development. Both Head Start and migrant staff often attend the Title I trainings as their schedules allow. Initial data from ASD's pre-K program is promising. Students are better prepared for success in kindergarten. Children come to school with the necessary skills they need to follow directions, listen during group time, make friends, regulate their feelings, and are confident learners, knowing many early literacy and math skills. In closing, I wanted to highlight, from my perspective, a particular strength of one of the many positive outcomes of Anchorage's AP3 program. That's the state-funded Alaska pilot. What we have experienced is a shift from previously coordinating with Head Start to a true collaboration and partnership. Each entity, ASD and KCI, has its strengths and bring those to the table in the daily work that it does with children, families, and staff. An example I would like to share, and there are many, is this. Head Start walks the talk in engaging families and has modeled for our schools and staff how to successfully involve parents and guardians. The importance and the value placed in home visits and the mentoring and coaching they provided to ASD staff is invaluable. And on the other side of that partnership is ASD's strong record of practitioners, teachers who understand intentional teaching and the importance of using assessment data to inform instructional practices. ASD's ability to mentor Head Start teaching staff is also of significant value. These kinds of rich exchanges and others like them across programs strengthen the infrastructure of early childhood communities to provide the highest quality classrooms and programs for many families, not just those involved in the AP3. Together, we are better for the collaboration. Research has documented both the short and long-term benefits of high-quality pre-K for more than 50 years through multiple studies, highlighting academic success and lifetime personal gains in their pre-K participants. There is additionally a vast and emerging body of research that continues to demonstrate the potential of publicly funded large-scale pre-K programs as a strategy for school reform and turning around a record of underachievement. As you listen today to testimony from various early childhood specialists around the state, I hope that you will not only consider the continuation of funding for pre-K, but also consider increasing this allocation. Early childhood is not a one-size-fits-all model. Families need a variety of program models that best match their child and personal family needs. ASD believes we have the beginnings of a great model that will have long-lasting ripple effects within ASD and the greater community. We are excited about the initial promising data that we are analyzing related to pre-K and putting forth funding for the continuation of our current pre-K programs, but we cannot do this alone. We need your help. There are many children and families with no access to high-quality pre-K. Thank you for your time this morning.
Okay, thank you. Beth, just one question I have. The bill that we're considering, Senate Bill 6, would allow all kids access to pre-K schooling. And I guess the question would be, are we in Anchorage, and I know you can only speak about Anchorage, are we prepared or able to accommodate these kids if this bill was able to get passed this year?
I believe that we have begun to have those kinds of discussions. We would need to be looking at space issues and other considerations in the district. But as I mentioned, we are very excited about what we are seeing with pre-K and how it can benefit the entire educational system in Anchorage. So those would be further discussions that we would need to have.
Okay, very good. Any other questions? Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Ms. Snyder. Senator Meyer asked a question about facilities, and I think that's going to be a continuing focus from this committee and others as we look at expanding pre-kindergarten is, can we absorb the number of kids necessary to make it a statewide program? We asked this question of Carol Como last weekend at the Anchorage Caucus. She said she'd be willing to put fifth and sixth graders in portables to make room for pre-kindergarten kids in classrooms, and so that's at least a step in the right direction. But I think what you're going to see is us phasing this in over time. As I listen to the debate on pre-kindergarten, it seems like no one has any arguments against the merits. I think everyone in the room and everyone in the building recognizes that early childhood development spending pays results. It's just some resistance at the large cost. So I guess one thing you can be thinking about is a phased-in approach that gradually brings in every child in Alaska that wants to participate. And so I guess my question is if I understood your testimony correctly, there are 176 kids in Anchorage now taking advantage of pre-kindergarten in one form or another. If I don't have that figure right, please correct me. But I guess
that's correct.
Okay. So the question is how many kids are there? How many 3- and 4-year-olds are there out there who might be willing to attend a pre-K program were it made available?
I think that's a great question and a question that I feel that Head Start can better address because of their community assessment process. They are really out there identifying the numbers in each community of young children. So it would be a great question to ask Mark But I think through this collaboration process, what has happened is we are really understanding more information about the demographics of Anchorage and who's out there, who's currently being served, and who's not being served.
Okay, thanks. And just a last question. It sounds like the criteria for a selection into the pilot pre-K is along the same lines as Head Start. That is, it's more or less aimed at Title I, and by that I mean lower-income folks. Is that, I think you mentioned kids who are experiencing problems with homelessness and so forth. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And additionally, with the increased number of ELL students in our district, that is also one of the priority selection criteria.
And just remind us what ELL means.
English language learners.
Thanks so much.
Okay. You bet.
Very good. And thank you for joining us this morning, Beth.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. You mentioned Mark Blackie, and we wanted to start with Mark, and he fell off. Mark, are you back with us? Mark is with
us. Yes, I am.
Okay. You're with the Head Start program, so if you could, again, just repeat your name and your affiliation, and please give us your presentation.
Sure. Good morning, and thank you very much for the time to address the committee. My name is Mark Lackey. I am the executive director of one of the Head Start grantees in our state. That grantee is CCS Early Learning, which provides Head Start services out in the MATSU, also in a portion of the municipality of Anchorage in Chugiak, Eagle River. I'm kind of speaking today on behalf of all of Head Start in the state for the Alaska Head Start Association. Just to quickly answer the question that was asked, it's actually a very timely question because I'm in the process of doing my community assessment right now. And so just yesterday I was researching the numbers of children. And so I can tell you that in Anchorage, now this is a municipality number, and this is a number that is an estimate of how many Head Start eligible children there are. We estimate that there's probably about 874 Head Start eligible children in the municipality of Anchorage. Of those 874, Head Start programs are currently serving 630 of them. So that maybe gives you a rough idea of how many, again, those are Head Start eligible, so that's, you know, 3- and 4-year-olds, and that are eligible based on income alone. That doesn't count children with disabilities or children that are over income. So I hopefully that answers the question. In the other part of my service area, which is the MATSU, we estimate that there's 426 children eligible out there, and we are serving 210 of those. So roughly half in the MATSU are being served, and in Anchorage, it's closer to probably 70%.
And just on that point.
So with that, I'll kind of move into my presentation. If you have additional questions, please.
Yeah, Mark,
please do shoot my way.
Sorry to interrupt. We do have one quick question. Senator French?
What are the income limits, just so we have some idea of, you know, sort of what segment of the population we're grabbing? You know, what are the annual?
I'll go through those in just one second, if you'll bear with me.
Yep, sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. You should have four handouts that I sent your way. On page 2 are the income limits. So I'll talk about those in just a second. Do you have the handouts? Could someone confirm that for me?
What is it? Head Start. Yes, I believe we do. Why don't you continue? Yes, we do have it.
Okay. So the handouts that I'm walking through are the ones that are titled Head Start. Very first page says, what does Head Start do? There's 4 pages. And so we were asked today to just kind of talk about our program a little bit and answer 4 basic questions. And so I'm really going to try and very succinctly answer those questions for you to give you a good basic understanding of what Head Start is about. I think there, from our experience, there tends to be a lot of confusion about the various early childhood programs, whether it's pre-K, parents as teachers, Best Beginning, Thread, Head Start. People just don't have a good understanding of what makes these programs different. And so my attempt today is to give you a good understanding about our program. I think that the association strongly believes that all of these programs are necessary, and they all fill a different niche within our state. And none of us, I think, can provide services on our own. So again, I really want to let you know what Head Start is and what we do. So that first page answers that question, what is it that we do? Head Start provides educational services that are very individualized to each child. We're really building that educational foundation for individual children. Wherever they're at, we start at their level and then attempt to move them forward. Some of the areas that we work on are listed there. The other main focus of our work is family education and empowerment. As Beth mentioned, we really have a strong emphasis on working with families. I think that, you know, I tell people that probably two-thirds of our time, energy, and resources are spent working with children, and another third of our time is spent working with families. We're doing home visiting. We're setting family goals. We're helping families deal with any issues that they feel are going to be, you know, a detriment to the success of their family or their child. If we know that if we can't address those family problems, those are going to linger, and they're going to be a hurdle for success of their children. So we spend a lot of time working with families. Listed there are all of the kind of comprehensive things that we have to do with children. So immunizations, physical exams, dental exams, mental health services, nutrition services, health services. And then once those exams are done, we are required to follow up on any concerns. So if a child has cavities, we are required to work with those parents to get those cavities addressed. We become the advocate and the helper for that family to make sure those things get addressed and taken care of. The overall goals of Head Start are listed there. We want to address and intervene in children and families as soon as we can. We know that if we can address these problems early, then we don't see problems in such magnitude later down the road. Again, working with families, making that educational foundation, social and emotional development. We get so much feedback from our kindergarten teachers about children coming to them. That's what they need for their kids to be, is ready to be in a classroom setting, knowing how to share and get along and be used to a classroom setting. And then removing any of those obstructions that we might find and making sure the kids are ready to participate. If they're hungry, they're not going to be as likely to succeed. So we take care of obstructions. Overall, bottom line, we want them to be ready for school. That's what we see as our role. So on the next page, this addresses who is eligible to attend Head Start. There are age requirements. Children have to be 3 years old by September 1, and they cannot attend if they're old enough for kindergarten. So the age range is basically 3 to kindergarten age. Family income has to be at or below the Alaska Poverty Income Guidelines, so that would be that top chart, which is 100% of poverty adjusted for Alaska. There is a little disclaimer there in that next sentence. We can accept regular Head Start programs, can accept up to 10% over income students. Programs that are operated by Alaska Native organizations have a little bit more flexibility in that they can accept 49% of their students over income guidelines. So to give you a little bit of perspective, in Alaska, we have 16 total Head Start grantees. 12 of those grantees are operated by Alaska Native organizations. So of the 16, 12 are at that 49%, and 4 are at the 10%. The numbers of children are probably more 50-50. Because those 10% programs are larger programs, but about half of children in Alaska fall into that 49%. I don't want to say 49% are over income, but they're in programs that have that flexibility. And then there is a little bit of a cushion. So up to 35% of a program's total enrollment may fall in that next chart, which is up to 130% of poverty, if programs can demonstrate that they've served all of the children below 100. 10% of our total enrollment must be set aside for children with diagnosed disabilities. And so we're also making sure that we're serving children that have more identified needs, whether those are speech or hearing or some sort of physical disability. If we have to serve 10% disabilities within our programs. And then down at the bottom of the page, there's some categories that make children and families categorically eligible. So if a family is receiving temporary assistance, they're categorically eligible for Head Start. A homeless family is categorically eligible. Children who have a family member that's on SSI, they are categorically eligible. And foster children, or those children that are in foster care, are categorically eligible. And I would just say that for all of these things that I'm talking about, this is federal requirements. These are all outlined in federal statute. We are a primarily federally funded program, and so all of these things are outlined in performance standards. The next page, just wanted to give you some really brief things that we think makes us different from some other programs. Not all of these things are different from every program, but these are kind of the things that we think makes us stand out. First is that comprehensive focus that we have, looking at the entire children, making sure that health, nutrition, mental health, dental, et cetera, all those types of things are taken care of. And the other big thing that I think sets us apart is our focus on working with that family. It's not just about, you know, pushing the child along or working with the child. It's making sure that the family is a partner in that effort and that we're addressing the needs that the family has as well as the needs that the family thinks the child has. And so I think that's really a strength and something that's different in our program. We also are governed by parents and by the community. We're mandated to have two governing bodies. The parent body is called the Policy Council. The governing body in my organization is a board of directors. I'm a nonprofit organization. Many of our tribal organizations, their governing body is their tribal organization, the board for that. Both these parents and this governing body have to approve where the services are delivered, in what community, or maybe where in the community the need is greatest, and in what way. There's different models of delivering services. That might be in a center-based program where children are coming to school. It could be in a home-based model where services are being provided in the home. So it really is up to each individual community. They have the opportunity to design their program locally as long as it falls within the performance standard guidelines. Another aspect that I think makes us a little bit different is that we have in-kind and non-federal share requirements. So federal Head Start grants require a 20% non-federal match, and this match can be in cash or in kind. Many, many programs, including my own, get this in-kind, or a big portion of this in-kind, from parents volunteering. We're able to put a dollar figure on all those hours that parents come in, and this does a couple things for us. Not only does it help us get our match, but it also gives us an additional avenue to get parents involved and engaged in the education of their child. For some parents, it's an ideal opportunity to model for them what appropriate developmental practice is like with their children. So very, very important aspect, I think, of our program. And the reason I think it was designed that way is to encourage parental involvement. 45 years of history. Head Start started back in 1965. We have been changing and evolving over time for 45 years. The systems for delivering services, for governance, for monitoring, reporting are already in place. I mentioned those performance standards. Those really outline what our programs have to do. All Head Start programs are reviewed every 3 years by a team of federal reviewers. They come into programs and they do a comprehensive look at all systems. They'll look at child files. They'll look at our financial books. They'll look at what Policy Council and Board is doing. They'll make sure that we're able to report and track and monitor each individual child and their development and how we work with them. It's a very comprehensive look. And so every program is kind of looked at by the feds. There's also professional development qualifications and mandates.
Mr. Lackey?
So if you look there, you can see the different federal mandates that are outlined and the timelines that we're reaching to meet. So here in this coming September, we're mandated to have 100% of our classroom teachers with an associate's degree in early childhood education. In a couple of years down the road, 50% of the classroom teachers nationwide must have a bachelor's degree in early childhood education or a bachelor's degree that's related and some teaching experience.
Mr. Lackey.
Yes.
Yeah, if you could. We have several presentations today. I'm not sure how much time you were told, but we'd like to try to limit everybody to about just 5 minutes and kind of give us just a brief overview of the various pre-K programs that are out there. So if you wouldn't mind maybe summarizing, I think we're pretty familiar with Head Start anyway, so maybe if you could just summarize your presentation, that would be very helpful.
The last page that I have there, I think, is a pretty good summary.
Okay.
The other question we wanted to answer is how we fit into the overhaul work of the state. We're the largest program, providing services to 34 children, 100 communities. We also just worked with DEED to get our children assigned the state identifier number. So Head Start children now, we can track their progress all the way through their public school days. We also have been working to collect data. This is a first across the nation, I think, in that all Head Start programs in Alaska are going to be using the same curriculum and the same assessment tool. That's not required by federal mandate. That's something Alaska programs have set up so that we can give you, at the state level, a comprehensive look of what we're doing in our programs. So I'm really excited about that. That should be coming in the next couple of years. I would say probably this next year. We're also partnering with all other programs that are out there, regardless of their early childhood or they're providing family services across the state. And I think that really summarizes Head Start. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Okay. Well, we'll see if there are any questions from committee members. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lackey, what do you use as a comparison or what is used as a comparison to determine the results based on, I guess, just who do we compare to? Those that do not attend any kind of pre-K programs, is that what is used as a comparison?
There have been national studies that have looked at, you know, Head Start versus kids that haven't received Head Start services. And those results have shown that when they're done with our program, that they're ahead of their peers that didn't have those services provided. We don't have local or statewide data to point to, but that's been the comparison that's done at the national level.
And just quickly, I'm on page two. You have size of family unit. I understand a two-person family unit, but I'm unsure what the one-person family unit would be. What would that?
Yeah, that really doesn't apply.
Okay. All right. I was hoping it was not that simple of an answer, but anyhow. And I think the last thing is, do you keep statistics? Do you know what the program costs statewide per child?
It's very, very different depending on the community where services are delivered and also the model of services that those communities are using. But generally, I think we kind of quote $10,000 per child. There's going to be some that are probably more significantly above that, and there's some that are going to be less than that as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Senator Stevens has a question.
Yeah, it's a very simple question, Mr. Chairman. You've mentioned homeless children several times. I don't really understand how much repellent that is. Could you tell me how many students do you have who you would consider homeless in your communities?
I can give you answers for our own program here in the MATSU, and I can get answers on a statewide basis. But in our own program, in our last year, I believe we had 22 families that were categorized as homeless. And that's the federal definition of homelessness. So this might be a family that doesn't have a home of their own and is living with another relative. It could be a family that, you know, is living out of a car or an RV or that type of thing. And so that's in our own program in the MATSU and Chugiak Eagle River. It was around 22 families. And we also have data that shows by the end of the year how many families that started in that situation we were able to help resolve. And so I can, if the committee would like, I can certainly get that data specific to my program, and also I think I can get it statewide as well.
Well, I'm not sure that's necessary, but I just want to get a perspective on it. I have no idea. So 22 families in your communities. Thank you.
Yep, very good. Yeah, I know Carol Como has given us that number as well for Anchorage, and it's a fairly large number. Surprisingly, how many kids are classified as homeless.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your presentation today, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, next we're going to go, we'll go to Best Beginnings with Abby Hensley. And Abby, I think your program is probably one that we're the most familiar with. So if you could, again, just kind of give us a brief overview of what Best Beginnings does and see if we have questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate being able to speak with you this morning and to continue our conversation about young children and early learning. My name is Abby Hensley, and I'm the executive director with Best Beginnings. The fact that you sit on this committee demonstrates your commitment to the future of Alaska. We all have a stake in ensuring that all Alaska children begin school happy, healthy, and ready to succeed, and as they graduate from high school and become productive members of society. As Susan Anderson with the Siri Foundation likes to say, in comparison with other states, we have a manageable number of young children here, about 50,000 under the age of 5. And that means about 10,000 new Alaskans are born every year, or fewer than 200 a week. And while I'm concerned, as you are, about all those children, I have a special interest in two of the 200 babies that were born in the past week. Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, our oldest daughter, Priscilla, gave birth to her first child, Lewis James Holthouse, in Anchorage. And on Monday, just 2 days ago, our youngest daughter, Elizabeth, also gave birth to her first child, Akatuksikagorak Padilla, in Washington, D.C., where I am today. Mm-hmm. And these two babies joined five cousins who are 5 and under, and they're my personal reasons for being engaged in this work.
All right,
and if we turn to Best Beginnings and its birth, Best Beginnings, as you know, is not a program. Rather, it's a movement that was begun in September 2006 to carry out recommendations made by the Ready to Read, Ready to Learn Task Force. And the task force included members from both the public and private sectors, and many of them remain active with Best Beginnings today. Best Beginnings works with many partners at both the state and local levels to support parents as their child's first and most important teachers, to promote access to high-quality, affordable early learning programs for families who want them, to increase awareness among Alaskans of the importance of early learning and the value of investing, and to see that sufficient funds are committed from public and private sources to ensure that every Alaska child has the opportunity to begin school ready to succeed. Best Beginnings leverages state funding with contributions from foundations, businesses, community organizations, and individuals. And local matching funding is both in-kind and cash. We know that young children are best served by a statewide early childhood system that empowers families, links service providers, and engages communities on behalf of young children. And Best Beginnings pursues this goal by promoting early learning activities, public education and awareness, early literacy, and community partnerships. Examples of Best Beginnings efforts include resources such as a website and print materials for parents in English, Spanish, and Yupik, engaging radio and TV spots. For example, a group of radio stations in Anchorage recently began airing Best Beginnings spots that they recorded especially to appeal to young parents, and Martin Hooser donated his time for a TV spot that says, "It all starts in the puppy pen." And 2 years ago, Best Beginnings took up statewide sponsorship of Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. I think everybody agrees that becoming a good reader provides a critical foundation for learning throughout school and life. An Imagination Library was selected for a couple of reasons. Books are delivered directly to a child's mailbox so he can build a home library of up to 60 books. And the child's excitement about getting his own book in the mail is a great motivator for parents and extended family to read the book with the child. It's a good value for the investment. It's about $30 per child per year. And there's a widely held evidence-based belief that reading with young children has positive results. Well, Imagination Library in Alaska is run a little differently than in other states, and We think this means that there is more impact and a greater chance for sustainability. First of all, it's community-based and volunteer-driven. Volunteers in over 70 communities are making sure children are enrolled, books are delivered, and human and other resources are available to keep it going. Second, there's support through a statewide network. Best Beginnings provides needed hands-on technical assistance to those volunteers so they can be successful. And last, local Imagination Library groups organize parent engagement activities to help parents help their children get the most from the program. And the evaluation of Imagination Library in Alaska, conducted last year by researchers at UAA, showed that children who were enrolled for longer than 1 year had more books in their home, they were read to more, and they were more enthusiastic about books and reading. And all these are indicators of a greater likelihood of a child becoming a good reader. The network of Imagination Libraries continues to grow, and just yesterday, 3 new communities were added. Next month, in April, 12,720 children will get a free age-appropriate book in their mailbox. And what about the future? Well, taking into account what the Dollywood Foundation tells us about the take-up rate in other states, 70% or so, we can expect 35 to 40,000 children who could be enrolled, depending on what we learned from the recent census. While there are still more communities that can become involved, we know that the greatest numbers of children eligible to participate are where most children live. Matsu, Anchorage, Kenai Peninsula, and so on. New partners with Best Beginnings include Providence Children's Hospital, providing financial and human resources to enroll all babies born at Providence Hospitals, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, also providing financial and human resources to help. Well, Imagination Library is community-based with its primary focus on early literacy. A more comprehensive effort to improve early learning opportunities for young children is being taken on by a network of 11 early childhood partnerships across the state. And we think that many Imagination Library groups will need a more formal partnership as time goes on. Currently, they range from small communities like Huna to the largest, Anchorage. With support from Best Beginnings, these partnerships are working to improve coordination of programs and services and promote better use of resources. All young children really have the same basic needs, but their needs can be met in different ways depending on a community's values, resources, interests, and cultures. People in a community are in the best position to identify what children in their area need and how to fill the gaps. Volunteer-driven partnerships completed a needs and assets assessment of their community. They identified priorities, and they've developed a strategic plan that they have indeed begun to implement. And they're bringing together a diverse group to work on early childhood issues, often for the first time in their community. I want to tell you a little bit about what's happening in one community with the Best Beginnings Partnership. The goals that they identified include strengthen early care and learning environments for children, improve access to health care for young children, broaden awareness and scope of local family support systems, increase opportunities for affordable play opportunities, and maintain an active partnership. Here's a snapshot of the work that they've accomplished. They say, the funds and organization provided by Best Beginnings has helped spread a partnership that has resulted in getting a lot for our money. As we use the grant funds to work on projects the local partnership has deemed valuable, we see eager participation by agencies and experts. This natural in-kind effort results in a greater impact than just the funds alone could make. The website that was created with financial and technical assistance from Best Beginnings, quote, continues to be one of our best achievements. January saw a 222% increase in visits to the site with almost 60% new visitors, and they've received many positive comments. And they said that with help and resources from their local thread office, along with Best Beginnings help, they held an all-day symposium for child care providers on healthy food and the value of family meals with 52 attending. They're also providing, in this partnership, financial incentives for training for child care providers, and they've organized peer-led playgroups, a low-cost item with a big return. This partnership has brought together CEOs from several local businesses to explore the development of a child care center for their employees. This effort was a no-cost one, but was possible because of work the members of the partnership are doing collaboratively. In addition to representatives from their school district and university, business, faith community, library, Imagination Library, public health, parks and rec, this partnership includes representatives from early childhood programs such as Head Start, Early Head Start, and parents as teachers. They are demonstrating how this kind of community-based effort can break down silos, encourage programs based on articulated needs rather than, quote, following the money, unquote, promote collaboration rather than merely cooperation, and use resources, both human and financial, in a more efficient and effective manner.
Abby, I don't mean to interrupt, but do you think you could summarize, and we'll see if there's any questions, because we do have other people we want to hear from. So I apologize, yes, but I think we're pretty familiar with the best beginnings. But go ahead.
I have just a couple of paragraphs left I'd like to share with you. So thank you, Senator. And Best Beginnings would like to see a comprehensive birth to five early childhood system that includes many options for families and their children, from no-cost or low-cost programs such as Imagination Library to more intensive, more expensive programs that some children need. And then in relation specifically to Senate Bill 6 and pre-K and the space needs that you were asking about earlier on, we really recommend a diverse delivery system for pre-K, as has been successful in other states. For example, the pre-K component could be delivered through child care centers in a collaboration similar to that used with Head Start programs. And we'd like to continue this conversation during the interim with this committee, with your counterparts in the House, the new Early Childhood Coordinating Council, to encourage greater understanding of the issues around early learning and what our goals as a state are for our young children and the financial commitments that we make. And, you know, my family has a history of public service, and that means lots of boxes full of papers and reports. And Willie and I have been going through many of these boxes lately. I had forgotten about the Department of Education Committee on Early Learning I served on 22 years ago. As I read the report, I realized that far too many of the statements and recommendations made in that report are the very same ones we're coming up with today. I don't know about you, but 22 years from now, when the two babies I told you about earlier, Lewis and Akituk, are young adults, I hope they can look back and say, 2011 was the year Alaskans stopped just releasing reports and making recommendations and stepped up to ensure a real statewide early childhood system that empowers families, links service providers, and engages communities on behalf of young children so that all Alaska children begin school ready to succeed. Thank you very much for your time and for your interest in this critical topic.
Great. Thank you, Abby. Any questions for Abby? Thank you, Abby. Yeah, I know you've been down here, General, many times talking to us about Best Beginnings, so I think most of the committee members are familiar with the program and certainly know how to get a hold of you if they have any questions. But thank you for joining us today, and congratulations on being a new grandmother.
Thank you. If I could just say one more thing, Senator. Beth Snyder and Mark Lackey, both are participants in Best Beginnings Early Childhood Partnerships in their own community.
Great.
So I just wanted to share that and show you that there is such a connection among our work.
Good, good. Yeah, and I think that's the purpose today, is just to let the committee know of the various programs and agencies out there all dealing with the pre-K program and how you're all working together. So let's go on to another group, the Rural CAP group, Kristen Ramstad. She's going to be talking to us as parents, as teachers, which I know is of interest to Representative Tuck as well. Let's see. Kristen, are you online?
Yes, good morning. I'm at the LIL in Anchorage.
Okay, very good. And if you could, in 5 minutes or less, tell us about the Rural CAP Parents as Teachers program.
I sure will. My name is good. Kristen Ramstad. I am the Parents as Teachers Director for the Rural Alaska Community Action Program, and I am representing the entire Parents as Teachers programs across the state. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning. The Parents as Teachers program is based on the philosophy that parents are the child's first and most influential teachers. I have included three handouts for you, a PowerPoint, the Padalaska fact sheet, and the RealCap Parents as Teachers brochure. If you will look at page 2 on the PowerPoint, it explains the Parents as Teachers goals. The goals are to increase parent knowledge of early childhood development and improve parenting practices, provide early detection of developmental delays and health issues, prevent child abuse and neglect, and increase children's school readiness and school successes. The Parents as Teachers program consists of four components. It is completely voluntary for families and uses a research-based curriculum to provide 1 to 2 personalized meetings with families per month, 1 to 2 group socialization events per month, and annual developmental vision and hearing screening. In addition, Parents as Teachers links families with identified and needed local, regional, and state resources. So what do we do in Parents as Teachers? Certified parent educators provide families research-based information and utilize evidence-based practices to partner, facilitate, and reflect on families' lives. Parent educators use the PAT foundational curriculum in culturally sensitive ways to deliver services that emphasize three main areas: parent-child interaction, development-centered parenting, and family well-being. During the parent-child interaction portion of the home visit, an activity is presented that focuses on parent-child interactions, prompts parent engagement, and encourages child development. Developmental-centered parenting is family educators explain the link between a child's stage of development, the child's behavior, and then appropriate parenting decisions. Parent educators also focus on family well-being by working to strengthen protective factors in each family. This involves understanding their needs and wishes and helping them set a plan to attain those. The final portion of a personalized visit is a literacy activity where parents and children conduct shared reading activities. I've included in the PowerPoint who we serve in Parents as Teachers. We serve families with children birth to 5. We serve special populations, which include teen parents, children with special needs, culturally and linguistically diverse families, military families, and families referred to our programs by OCS. We serve rural and urban communities, and we also serve families who reside in intervention school districts. So who delivers the program? 71% of the Parents as Teachers programs in Alaska are delivered by nonprofit agencies. 29% are delivered by school districts. I have included a slide on the demographics from the 2009-2010 program year. Around the state, parent programs were in 39 communities, served 781 families, and 967 children. I've also included the ethnicity of the children served. So how are we different from other programs? Well, we walk the talk that parents are the child's first and most influential teacher. We empower parents with knowledge and resources to help their children develop into successful students with strong scholastic achievement. We facilitate parents' meeting and learning from other parents. Parent educators focus on explaining to parents how children's brains develop and how to create a positive learning environment for the child in the home. Parent educators distribute resources, handouts, and share follow-up activities with families so that we can extend learning opportunities in the home between visits. Parents as Teachers also has a state advisory board. This advisory board meets quarterly and has a diverse membership, which includes members from the Department of Health and Social Services, the Office of Public Advocacy, South Central Foundation, Bristol Bay Hospital, Hoonah School District. We have parents. The Alaska court system is represented. And so is Best Beginnings. Additionally, before parent educators can provide PAT services, they must be certified in the curriculum, which is a rigorous 5-day process in which they must pass an assessment to deliver services. But I think one of the most important ways that we're different is we have a very low cost to deliver parents and teacher services. Around the state, the average cost is between $3,200 and $4,000 per family. On page 10, I shared some parents and teachers results from around the state. But what I would like to share with you is some successes that have been unique to Rural CAP in the past year that show how successful and how this program has been proven to work in this state. Out of 241 parents who completed a program evaluation for us, 240 reported improved parenting skills, including positive discipline techniques. 100% of them, 241, shared that they learned new activities to enhance learning, child development, and brain development. 240 shared they learned the importance of reading and early learning, early literacy activities, 240 expressed that they increased their understanding of their role as their child's first teacher. And 100% of them said that they observed an increase in the skills needed for their child to succeed in the next learning environment. So how do we fit in with all the rest of the early childhood programs? The slide continuum of early learning explains that. Parents as teachers is primarily a 0-5 program. We do provide 0-3 services. We transition into Head Start, private and public preschool if they are available in the community, and then to school districts. If there is no 3-5 programs available in the community, we do serve 0-5. How else do we fit in? We use the early learning guidelines to guide our work. It does work in rural and urban areas. And one of the best successes is that it can be offered by various local entities, so school districts, councils, nonprofit organizations, to make sure it's a success. You have any questions?
Okay, very good. Yes, we do. Senator French has a question.
Just quickly, I want to thank you for hanging in there and making your presentation today. My back-of-the-envelope calculation is that you are by far and away the most cost-effective program that we've heard a presentation from today. I know that you aren't doing all-day instruction, but you are training parents, and you're doing so at a cost that looks like to me almost a tenth of what the other programs are. So I just want to thank you for that and encourage you to keep going.
Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. Thank you for your testimony this morning, or the presentation, actually. Okay, there are other organizations who would like to testify or give us their overview of their various programs or agencies. One that comes to mind is and had listed wanting to talk to us is Child Care Resources. Stephanie Berglund. And Stephanie, unfortunately, we are out of time, but if you could send us anything about Child Care Resources, that would be good. Also, on Friday, as I mentioned, we are going to take public testimony on Senate Bill 6, which has to do with a voluntary pre-K program with our school system. And so if you'd like to talk at that or testify at that particular time, that will certainly be fine. Kelly McBride, I understand you wanted to testify on Senate Bill 6, and like I said, we will take that up on Friday. And Loletta Bracci in Homer, who wanted to talk about Families First. Again, if you want to send us some information on Families First, we would certainly like to have that, or if you want to testify on Friday, that will work as well. And then we had a couple people here in the audience who wanted to testify. And again, if you can come back on Friday, my apologies. The presentations were a little longer than we anticipated. And then also what we want to do is we want to get an update on the pilot program that has been going on, put on by Cindy Kerr and Paul Sugar. And they're with the Interagency Early Childhood coordinating council, again, Department of Education, and we want to hear what you have to say about the pre-K pilot program that has been going on. I think we funded that at $2 million last year, was it? I guess there's been some differences of opinion on how much we should fund that in the future. So, again, it'll be good to hear how that's been working and the success of that. And I think that will lead in really nicely into then Senator Davis and Senator French's Senate Bill 6, we'll take testimony on this. On that, obviously, pre-K is a big issue and a big topic, and so I hope the committee doesn't mind us taking this time to get our hands around it and try to understand it as much as possible. It's, I think some people would say it's probably the most important, and one of the most important parts of a child's education is the education they get before they even start school. So, again, I think that's it. My apologies if you wanted to testify today and we didn't get to it, but we will continue this on Friday. Am I forgetting anything? Okay, committee members, anything? All right. If there's nothing else coming for the committee, we are adjourned until Friday. Yep.